Hello, this is Brian Tracy, and thank you for listening to this program. I want you to stick around at the end of this program because I'm going to make you an offer that you can't refuse. I'm going to make you an offer, especially if you're a business owner or you're thinking of starting a business that could be worth thousands, even tens of thousands of dollars to you, and it's completely free. No charge. It's no cost, no obligation, completely free. So stick around and let me explain it to you when we get to the end of this program. All right, let's begin. Hello, this is Brian Tracy, and welcome to this program. Let's cut right to the chase. One of the great keys to success in business is to operate your business like a turnaround, as if you were on the verge of going broke every single day. This attitude dramatically sharpens your perception, improves your decision-making, and increases your level of activity. It forces you to evaluate every expense and to focus with laser-like intensity on generating sales, revenues, and cash flow. Now, millions of businesses have been through abrupt downturns, reversals, problems, difficulties, and setbacks. It is estimated that in running a business, you will have a crisis every 2 or 3 months that can sink your business if you do not respond to it effectively. It can be a financial crisis, a customer crisis, a sales crisis, an overall business crisis, a personal crisis, or even a health crisis, but you will have crises over and over again. The only question is, how effectively do you respond to the inevitable crises of business life? The most important discovery about successful people is that they take continuous action in the direction of their goals. They practice what is called in military terms the continuous offensive. They are always trying different things, and if they don't work, they try something else. They're never satisfied, and they are never complacent. They are continually moving forward to generate sales, revenues, and cash flow, and so must you. Perhaps the three biggest enemies of success in business and in life are the comfort zone, learned helplessness, and the path of least resistance. With the comfort zone, people get into the habit of thinking and doing the same things in the same way, even if they aren't working anymore. People resist moving out of their comfort zones, but no progress is possible if you keep doing the same things in the same way. You know, you've heard it said that the more you do of what you're doing, the more you get of what you've got. With learned helplessness, people feel like victims, as if they are overwhelmed by the situation and there's nothing that they can do. They start to use the words, I can't or we can't, over and over, which is a way of saying that they don't see any way forward. But there's always a way forward. The third enemy of success is the path of least resistance. This is the natural tendency of people to follow the fastest and easiest way to get the things they want in the short term with little concern about the long-term implications of their behaviors. The fact is that almost all success requires self-discipline, the ability to make yourself do the things that are hard and important rather than the tendency to slip into doing the things that are fun and easy. Now, the lifeblood of a business is cash flow. All other activities must be relegated to secondary importance in the quest for cash flow. There is only one real source of cash flow, and that is customers and sales. Unfortunately, in most businesses, most of those people spend most of their time doing things that have little to do with generating customers and the revenues and cash flow that they represent. They did a study of managers recently, and they asked them how important sales were to their business, and they said, oh, very important, very important. And then they did a time and motion study with them, following them around with clipboards and stopwatches. They found that the average executive, business owner, entrepreneur spent only 11% of their time during the day on sales, and all the rest was taken up with busy work and meetings and coffee breaks and lunches and proposals and so on. Only 11% on sales. Goethe said, "The things that matter most must never be at the mercy of the things that matter least." Stephen Covey said, "The main thing is to make the main thing, and the main thing in a business is sales." What is the purpose of a business? Most people say it's to make a profit. No, it is not to make a profit. The real purpose of a business is to create and keep a customer. Profits are the results of creating and keeping enough customers in a cost-effective way. The key people in the business must be obsessed with creating customers all day long in every way possible. what is the key measure of business success? It is customer satisfaction. Your job in business is to create customers and then to satisfy them completely so that they are happy that they decided to do business with you. What is the ultimate question that you must ask and answer continually in your business? It is this. Based on your experience with us, on a scale of 1 to 10, would you recommend us to others? You will find that 85% of your repeat and referral business will come from people who are so happy with your products and services that they eagerly tell other people about you and encourage other people to patronize your business. How well are you doing on this score? When you ask customers this question, you'll be amazed at the answers you get. But your job is to raise your score to this question. Based on your experience with us, would you recommend us to others on a scale of 1 to 10? Even more important, how could you increase your score? What could you do, starting today, to take such good care of your customers that they eagerly buy from you again and recommend you to others? Your answer to this question can change the entire direction of your business, especially in a tough economy where there are fewer customers and tougher competition. Your ability to survive and thrive in the face of continual problems and difficulties as a leader is the key to your success in business and in life. There are 7 steps that you can take to deal with any setback or reversal in crunch time. Number 1, stay calm. Take a deep breath. Refuse to become excited, fearful, or anxious. The calmer you remain in the face of a crisis, the better you can think, the better you can analyze, the better decisions you can take. The fact is that your neocortex, your frontal brain, which is responsible for all your thinking capabilities, functions best when you're calm, cool, and relaxed. It shuts down if you become angry or fearful. Step 2 in crunch time, the true test of leadership, is to get the facts. Don't assume anything or jump to conclusions. Instead, ask questions, listen, and withhold judgment until you understand all the details. Here's a great discovery. While you're asking questions, you automatically become calm. If you ask questions with no attempt to frame the outcome or the answer, just listen patiently, you'll find that you'll start to calm down and everyone else will calm down as well. Step 3, take responsibility. Refuse to complain, criticize, or blame others. Instead, simply say, "I am responsible," over and over again, even if it is just taking responsibility for the way you respond to what happens. If you're a leader, tell the other people, "We're responsible." If someone else is in charge, say, "You're responsible." But the very act of accepting responsibility gives you a sense of control, calms you down, clears your mind, and makes you more capable of thinking clearly. The opposite of accepting responsibility is becoming angry with other people and blaming people or circumstances on your situation, which shuts down your brain. Number 4, in dealing with a crunch, remain confident. Remind yourself that you have the intelligence and ability to deal with any problem. Nature never sends you a problem that is too big for you to deal with. One of the things we know is it's usually never as bad as it initially appears, nor is it ever as good. And you've dealt with big problems in the past, and you'll deal with big problems in the future. So take a deep breath, stay calm, and remind yourself, hey, you can handle this. The 5th step is to unleash your creativity. Whatever is happening, treat it as a problem that has a logical solution. Begin immediately to seek new, better, cheaper ways to solve the problem. Most of all, be solution-oriented at all times. Number 6, concentrate on priorities. Make the main thing the main thing. Keep asking, what is the most valuable use of my time right now? Your ability to set priorities and then to dedicate yourself to working on your most important task is the key to your achieving the highest levels of personal effectiveness. And this never changes. And finally, number 7, in dealing with crunch time, counterattack. Think about what is happening, make a decision, and then take action. Practice the continuous offensive. Remember, continuous action in the direction of clearly defined goals is the only cure for worry and stress. As you become intensely action-oriented, you'll feel a tremendous sense of personal power and control over your life and your environment. Now, some years ago, a book was written by Chris Zook called Profit from the Core. And this book has some really, really great ideas. It says basically that every business starts with a core product or service and expands from there into other areas. In times of market contraction, you have to get back to your core business. You have to dance with the one what brung you. So analyze the core elements of your business regularly. Number one, what are your core competencies? What is your company especially good at? What are you personally very good at? What additional competencies will you need to survive and thrive in the future? All businesses start with one or more people who have core competencies or abilities to get specific results for which customers will pay them. What are your core competencies today, and what will they need to be in the future? Number two, what are your core products or services? What are the products that you sell the most of, the easiest, and which are the most profitable for you? Every company starts off with core products and services that are the milk cows of the business. They're the ones, the products and services that the company is built around before it expands. And in times of contraction, you've got to get back to them and defend them and sell more of them. Number three, who are your core customers? Apply the 80-20 rule. Who are your most profitable customers? Who are the ones that are the easiest to sell to and to service? Who are the ones that you would hate to lose more than any other of your customers? And think about that, because holding on to your core customers in recessionary times is one of the most important strategies you can use. Number four, what are your core marketing methods? What are the things that you do in advertising and promotion that attract the most qualified prospects per dollar of expenditure? And be clear about this, because remember, 80-20, top 20% of your marketing methods attract 80% of your qualified prospects. Remember, 50-50, 50% of marketing and advertising dollars are wasted, but nobody knows which 50% they are. You have to find out. Number five, what are your core selling methods? What are the arguments and persuasive methods, techniques, and statements that convert the greatest number of prospects to customers? What is your unique selling proposition? The one single factor about your product or service that causes people to buy it rather than to buy it from your competitors. You have to know your USP, your unique selling proposition, and you have to build all your marketing and sales efforts around it. Number six, who are your core people? Who are the most valuable people in your business? The ones that you would hate most to lose? Who are the people who contribute the greatest value and who are essential to the success of your enterprise? And number seven, what are your core strengths as a business? What is it that customers like the most about what you do for them? How could you capitalize on these strengths and make them your own personal point of the spear in generating sales, revenues, and cash flow? Your ability to focus and concentrate on those areas where real results are possible is the key to your success, and you have to know the answers to these core questions. Now you need to analyze the seven P's of the marketing mix. In times of rapid change, increased competition, and shrinking markets, you must be absolutely clear about the seven key areas. According to Dun & Bradstreet, the number one reason for business success is high sales. The number one reason for business failure is low sales. All else is commentary. A change in any one of the seven P's of the marketing mix can have an enormous impact on your sales, revenues, and cash flow. It can make all the difference between success and failure. The first P is your product or service. Exactly what do you sell? Now, this seems like a simple question, but it's not, because you have to ask, what do you sell in terms of what does the customer buy? And remember, customers do not buy what your product is. They only buy what it does. So you always have to define your product or service in terms of what it does to improve the life or work of your customer without mentioning the name of your product or service. So here's the first point. Is this the right product or service for this market at this time? The way that you can tell is that it's selling well and you're making a profit. B, are you recognized as a leader in your industry? Are you in the top 10% of companies in your industry offering this product or service? If not, why not? And if not, how can you get into the top 10%? Remember, all the profits go to market leadership. People only buy the product or service that they feel is superior in some way to that of their competitors. And C, what other products or services could you offer? Don't fall in love with your existing product or service. Remember, your job is to create and keep a customer, and that may require your changing your product or service line or offerings completely in order to stay in business. Customer tastes change all the time, and you have to change with them. Now, the second P is price. Is your price competitive? Is your price attractive? Is your price profitable? Remember, price is very, very important. A, should you change your pricing in any way? Be open to the need or the possibility of changing your pricing. The basic rule is what is called the market clearing price in economics. That means that you should be able to sell all the products and services you could offer if you are selling them at the right price. If you're not selling as much as you want, it can very often mean that the price is too high. So B, should you lower your price, increase your price, or keep it the same? There's a famous story of Neiman Marcus, the luxury department store, in September, October of 2008, when the market was imploding. They proudly announced to the market that Saks Fifth Avenue and the other companies could lower their prices, but not Neiman Marcus. Neiman Marcus was going to keep its prices high and its quality high throughout the economic downturn. Within 30 days, their stores were empty. Within another 30 days, they had to cut their prices 50 to 60% just to get people back in the store. They thought they could keep their prices high, but they had to reevaluate completely to stay alive. So you need to evaluate your prices all the time. And again, you can tell if your prices are right because people are buying lots of what you're selling. And C, analyze your competitors, their prices, and their results. In warfare, what the opposing general is doing determines what you do. What your competitors are doing determines what you do, and you always have to match or beat your most successful competitor. So you've really got to know what they're doing. Interesting point, when Sam Walton was building his business, he would get in his pickup truck and he would drive miles and sleep in the parking lot so he could wake up when competitive stores in different counties and different states opened up, so he could walk the floors of those stores to see what they were doing that he could bring back to his first Walmarts in Bentonville, Arkansas. Even today, the top managers of Walmart spread out across the country and visit their best competitors to look and see what their best competitors are doing to attract customers. Maybe you should do that as well. The third P is the place. Where is your product or service available? And A, should you sell your product or service in different places? Dell always sold their computer products by direct mail and by email and by telephone. And finally, they realized when the market changed, they needed to move out and they now sell in Walmart. IBM and Apple used to sell their products only directly. And then they realized with the changes in the market, they had to get into retail stores. There's 24 different ways and places for you to sell your product or service, and most companies only use one or two. Should you change, and should you add to what you're doing? And B, should you sell your product or service in different ways? There's a whole multiple of different ways to sell your products and services. You can sell them, you can upsell them, downsell them, cross-sell them, combine them with other products, break them up. You can sell them in different markets to different people at different prices with different quality ranges. You need to be wide open. You can even sell through a variety of different distribution channels, joint ventures, strategic alliances, and so on. But the only question is, does it work? Are your products working? Do your prices work? Is your place of sale working? That's the only question you ask, and if the answer is no, move fast to change it. Now, the fourth P is promotion, and this is really the biggest of all. It's how do you make the actual sale and collect the money? In other words, how do you promote? How do you get your goods out of the woods, as they say? And A, are your marketing methods effective? Are you attracting a sufficient number of qualified prospects with your current marketing methods? This is really important. And B, are your sales methods effective? Do you have well-trained, competent salespeople who can convert these prospects into customers? Do you know the very best companies have the best-trained salespeople? Second-best companies have the second-best-trained salespeople, and the third-best companies are on their way out of business. Sometimes a little sales training can double your sales results by people learning how to qualify better, establish better relationships, identify needs more accurately, make better presentations, answer objections, close sales, and so on. So think about how you could improve your marketing to attract prospects and your selling to convert those prospects into customers. The fifth P is packaging. Do your products and services look attractive on the outside? More than that, do they look as attractive or more attractive than your most successful competitors? A, is every visual aspect of your business appealing to your customers? Remember, customers are intensely visual. They take one look at your product or service, and they make their first impression in 4 seconds, and they make their final impression in 30 seconds, and it's always the visual appearance that decides whether they pick it up, whether they buy it, whether they pursue it. And B, is everyone who deals with your customers instilling credibility and confidence? Do all of the people who deal with customers in your business really look like customers can trust them, believe in them, and be confident that what they represent are great products and services? Many companies have transformed their businesses just simply by insisting upon a dress code amongst their salespeople, amongst their receptionists, amongst their managers and staff. So maybe you need to do that. Number six is positioning. How are you perceived in the marketplace? According to Reese and Trout, the way people see you, perceive you in the marketplace largely determines whether or not they do business with you. So here's the first question. A, how do people think about you and talk about you to others when you're not there? In other words, how do they think and feel about you in their hearts and minds? According to Theodore Levitt, your reputation among your customers is your most valuable asset, and it's your reputation is made up of the way they think about you when you're not there. So what is your reputation? And B, what words do they use to describe you? What words should they use? What words could they use if you were to change your treatment of customers in some way? Here's a great question. What words would be most helpful if customers thought about them when they thought about you to increasing your sales? Superb quality, fabulous customer service, wonderful people, speedy delivery, dependability, efficiency. In other words, what words would you like to own if you could, and what could you do to own those words in your customers' minds? And finally, number seventh P is people. Customers, as we know, are 90% or more emotional. That means that they're very affected by people. We say people, customers don't buy products, they buy people who sell products. So A, is every customer contact warm and friendly? And B, does everyone who communicates with your customers in some way increase credibility and confidence? Jan Carlson of SAS called this moments of truth. He said, every customer contact with a person in the company is a moment of truth. And the total feeling, thinking, believing of the customer in the market is a combination of all of these moments of truth. Is every customer contact a positive moment of truth that leaves behind a positive impression that causes people to want to buy from you again? Now, almost every company can improve both sales and profitability by changing one of these elements, by changing your product, changing your price, changing your place where your products or services are available, changing your methods of promotion, changing your packaging, changing your positioning, or changing the people who work with your customer. One change in any one of these areas can transform your business. Now, here's some ideas to supercharge your sales in any market. There's a simple, guaranteed way to increase or double your sales in any market. Number one, your sales, your income is determined by the number of minutes you spend face-to-face with customers. Every salesperson wakes up unemployed each morning and remains unemployed until he or she gets face-to-face with a qualified prospect. According to the research, the average salesperson works about 90 minutes per day, 1.5 hours. And this is according to Columbia University and Sales and Marketing Management magazine, going back to 1928. Fully 50% of working time is wasted in non-selling activities. So the key question each salesperson has to ask is, what I'm doing right now leading to a sale? Is what I'm doing right now leading to a sale? Now, we have developed in our sales work what we call the Law of Three. The Law of Three says that there are only three activities that account for 90% of your sales and 90% of your income. And they are prospecting, presenting, and closing. So give yourself a grade on how well you're doing in prospecting, presenting, and closing. And a grade of 1 to 10. And wherever you give yourself the lowest grade is where you're having the biggest problems and what is most determining your income today. So the 80-20 rule says do fewer things, but do more valuable things. Do these more valuable things, prospecting, presenting, and closing, more often, and get better at them. So here's a technique you can use, which are being used by companies all over the country now. It's called the stopwatch technique. Get yourself an inexpensive stopwatch and count the number of minutes that you spend each day in selling activities. Then, resolve to double the number of minutes that you spend face-to-face with customers each day. Resolve to spend 80% of your time prospecting, presenting, and closing. I was working with a company in the East, and they were saying that they expect their business to drop in the coming year because of the economy. I said, well, why don't you maintain your business or increase it? They said, well, we can't because of the way the market is. I said, what you should do is increase the level of activity of your people. Fully 80% of prospective customers in any market have never heard of you and have never been contacted by you. And in every million people, there's 60,000 companies, for example. They said, no, our salespeople are really professional. They're out there all the time. I said, your average salesperson spends 90 minutes a day in direct selling, and all the rest is warming up, warming down, reading the paper, taking lunch, and driving around. They said, no, that's not true. We've got pros that go back 15, 20 years. But they said, let's test it. So they handed out stopwatches to all their salespeople. After 30 days, they calibrated. They wrote to me and said, the average salesperson in our company is spending 90 minutes and 24 seconds per day with customers. So we put in a new rule that everybody spends 3 hours today face-to-face with customers. He said, our sales have gone up and all of our competitors' sales have gone down. We may even have a better year this year in a recession than we had last year before we started using stopwatches. So give it a try. And the final point with regard to doubling your income is to read, listen, learn, and get better at the big three, and then do them all day long. Here's the rule. If you double your minutes with prospects and customers each day, you will double and even triple your sales and income in any market. It sounds simple, but it works for everybody who tries it. Now we say, become brilliant on the basics. Most people have not been thoroughly trained on the basics of selling. Your weakest key skill sets the height of your income. So by identifying your weakest skill, you can actually bring up your income faster than with anything else you can do. And the good news is that all sales skills are learnable. All sales skills are learnable. Even if you're uneasy with a particular sales skill, it's only because you haven't mastered it yet. So give yourself a personal score of 1 to 10 in each of the key result areas of selling. Here they are. Number 1 is prospecting. This is finding people who have a problem that is unsolved, a need that is unsatisfied, a goal that is not achieved, or a pain that is not removed. You must be very clear about the most important benefits that you offer to your customers, what your product or service does for your customer to improve their life and work, and then ask yourself, where can I find more of this type of person? This is your target market. The second key result area in selling is establishing rapport and trust with prospects. Asking and listening so well that they will talk to you, open up to you, and tell you their true problems, wants, needs, and desires. The very best salespeople have the nicest personalities. People like them, like to talk to them, like to see them again, and like to buy from them. And the way you develop a great personality is by asking good questions and listening when you meet a prospect. Now, the third key result area is identifying needs accurately. This requires asking good questions, logically organized so that both you and the customer can determine that a need exists for what you are selling. Remember, don't start selling until it's clear that the customer has a need that your product or service can satisfy. The biggest mistake we make is we start talking about our product or service before we do a thorough examination, like a doctor, of the customer's situation and needs. So ask questions and listen closely to the answers. The fourth key result area is presenting persuasively. This means that you have a logical, organized sales presentation that overwhelmingly persuades the customer that your product or service is the exact right choice for him or her at this time. Fully 95% of all sales presentations can be improved. There's little changes in wording, little changes in order, little changes in phrasing that you can use by continually looking for ways to make it better so that you finally come up with a sales presentation that closes 9 out of 10 people before you even finish talking. The fifth key result area in selling is answering objections clearly. This means that you have thought through each of the objections that you are likely to get, and you have developed a logical answer that eliminates the objection entirely. One of the first things I do when I work with sales organizations is I sit down and I say, let's make a list of every objection that a qualified prospect could give for not buying. And we sit down and we write down all the objections, and sometimes it's 10, 20, 30, 40 objections. And what we find is that they all cluster into never more than six objections. Sometimes it's only one or two, but never more than six. And then we say, all right, what is a really, really good answer that would zap this objection? What's a good testimonial letter from a qualified customer who had this objection who could take it away? And we think of a way to answer objections. And many companies I've worked with have doubled and tripled their sales within 30 days simply by eliminating the major objections that hold people back from buying. Now, the sixth key result area is closing the sale. This means that you've developed a series of ways of professionally asking the customer to take action at the end of your sales presentation. Closing the sale is very simple if you know the words, and if you've practiced the words over and over. The very best salespeople are thoroughly prepared when they get to the end of the sales conversation. And the seventh key to sales success is getting resales and referrals. This means that you have a systematic process to achieve high levels of customer satisfaction so that they give you a golden chain of referrals to other customers who can and will buy within a reasonable time. Your goal should be to work by referral only. Your goal should be to take such good care of your customers and to ask for referrals so consistently that eventually you have more referrals than you have time to call on during the day. Your weakest key skill of the seven skills mentioned above determines your income. Improving your skill level in one area can be enough in itself to double your income in the weeks ahead. Imagine if you doubled your prospecting power so you had twice as many qualified people to speak to. Imagine if you doubled your presenting power so that you overwhelmingly persuaded people they should buy your product. Imagine if you doubled your closing power so you closed twice as many people you spoke to. This has happened so many thousands of times with graduates from my sales seminars that it's hardly even worth mentioning anymore, but it can change your whole career. So here's the question. If you could wave a magic wand and be absolutely excellent in any one area, which one skill would help you the most to double your income? And whatever your answer is to that question, which one skill would help you the most to double your income, write it down, set it as a goal, make a plan, and work on getting better in that area every single day until you master the skill. Here's another key to recession-proof your business. It's to practice zero-based thinking in every area. The most important quality for success in turbulent times is flexibility. And this often requires that you change in every area of your life and business. Zero-based thinking is one of the most powerful thinking tools that you'll ever learn. I say to conduct a quink analysis on every part of your business by asking, knowing what I now know, K-W-I-N-K, quink, is there anything that I am doing today that I would not get into again today if I had to do it over? Now, how do you tell if you have a zero-based thinking situation? It's simple. The answer is stress. And let me point out that in times of rapid change, all of us have zero-based thinking situations. We're all involved in situations that, knowing what we now know, we wouldn't get into because the situation has changed dramatically from when we made the original decision. So be open to the possibility that what you're doing today is something that is dead wrong. And the way that you know is that you wouldn't get into it again. And by the way, if you wouldn't get into it again today, it usually means that the only cure is to get out. It usually is a situation that cannot be saved. Now, what percentage of the time do you think that you will be wrong in business and in life? Well, according to the studies, it's about 70%. You'll be a little wrong, a lot wrong, or dead wrong 70% of the time. So what is it that successful people do? When they find they've made a mistake, they cut their losses quickly. They say, if I had not gotten into this, would I get into it? And if the answer is no, how do you get out and how fast? There are several areas where you must conduct this quink analysis on a regular basis in your business, especially in turbulent times. Number one is with people. Is there anyone in your personal or business life who, knowing what you now know, you would not get involved with again today? Is there anyone that you would not hire or assign or delegate a job to, knowing what you now know? Is there anyone in your business who, if they came and told you they were thinking of leaving, you wouldn't argue with them or ask them to stay. If there is, how do you get rid of the person and how fast? It's very important. The second place where you ask the zero-based thinking question has to do with products. Are there any products that you are offering to your market today that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't bring to the market again today? Remember, 80% of your products and services will be obsolete within 5 years, and many of them within 5 months. So don't fall in love with the product or service. If it's not selling, if your competitors are selling better, if people won't pay the price that you need to charge to stay in business, ask yourself, knowing what I now know, would I bring this product to market? And if the answer is no, how do you get out and how fast? Many companies will do this to save the business. Many companies will bring in an outside turnaround artist, and the first thing the turnaround artist does is eliminates all money-losing products, and that often saves the business. You should do this for yourself. Be your own turnaround expert. Now, the number three area for a quink analysis is services. Are there any services that you are offering to your customers that, knowing what you now know, you would not begin offering again today? Many companies, when times are really good, start to offer all kinds of services to their customers that their customers really don't value that much, but they appreciate. Sometimes by cutting back on those services, you can dramatically reduce your costs and maintain your profitability. Sometimes there are services that are core parts of your business that you offer customers that customers aren't buying. Maybe competitors have something better, or maybe the market has moved on. Ask yourself, knowing what I now know, would I bring these services to market? If the answer is no, how do you get out and how fast? The fourth area has to do with expenses. Is there any place in your business or personal life where you are spending money today that, knowing what you now know, you would not begin spending money in this area? Are there any processes in your business, any activities, anything that you're doing at any part of your business that you may have started up, but that, knowing what you now know, is not a good use of time and money? If there is, prepare to go through and cut it out. Cut your losses and get out as fast as you can. And finally, with investments, number five, are there any investments of time or money or emotion that, knowing what you now know, you would not invest in again? Is there any area where you invested a lot of time in a product, a service, an activity, but in retrospect it turned out to be not a good use of time? Well, look upon it, as accountants say, as a sunk cost, an investment of time that's gone forever, and instead of throwing good time after bad to try to preserve it, let it go. The second area has to do with money. Is there any area where you've invested money that, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't put your money into? If there is, then let it go. Realize that it's a sunk cost. The money's gone forever. You'll never retrieve it. So let it go and get on with the rest of your life. And finally, is there any area where you've invested a lot of emotion in a person, in a relationship, in an activity, a career, that in retrospect has not worked out? Well, have the courage and have the clarity to admit that you made a mistake and move on. Now, there are only four ways to change your business and your personal life. Number one, you can do more of certain things. You should be doing more of the things from which you are getting the very best results. And remember the law of the excluded alternative. Doing one thing means not doing something else. When you make up a to-do list in the morning, you should also make up a not-to-do list. And you should not spend time doing things that are not helping you toward achieving your major goals. You should spend more and more time, effort, energy, and expense on those things from which you're getting the best results. Now, the second way you can change your life is you can do less of other things. You should be doing less of those things that are not giving you the results you desire. Whenever you experience frustration or lack of results, ask yourself, should I be doing this at all? And sometimes cutting back in those areas can totally change the amount of time you have left to spend on the things that really generate you higher sales and profitability. Now, the third way to change your life is you could start doing something completely new. You could move out of your comfort zone, take a risk, and try something different. But remember this, human beings are very averse to change. We don't like change of any kind, so our first response to the idea that we should change or start something new is no, it wouldn't work. You have to get over that and approach it as though you were your own management consultant coming from the outside to give advice to your company. And the fourth way you can change things is you could stop doing certain things altogether. Using zero-based thinking, what activities in your life should you stop altogether so that you can free up more time so that you can do those things that can give you the very best results. Make a decision. Take action on your answers to these questions. What should you be doing more of, less of, start, or stop? More of, less of, start, or stop. And make this a mantra for the rest of your business life. Now, here's some ideas to think and act like a genius. Question: what is the most important work that you do? What is the highest paid work that you do? What is the most essential work that you do? And the answer is thinking. The reason that thinking is the most important thing you do is because it has the greatest potential consequences on your results and rewards. Something that has great potential consequences is important. Something that has low or no potential consequences is unimportant. And you must constantly be sorting out the important from the unimportant and working on those things that can have significant potential consequences. One good thought or idea can change your life and business in a positive way for months or even years. One poor thought, idea, or decision can sidetrack you or hold you back. Thinking is everything. The quality of your thinking determines the quality of your life. The most important quality for top people is thoughtfulness. That means they gather all the information and then they take the time to think before they make a decision or take action. So here are 7 ways to help you use your mind more effectively to think better and to achieve your goals. All these ideas start with the letter R. Number 1 is rethinking. Be prepared to rethink everything that you are doing. To practice zero-based thinking, especially when you are experiencing resistance, stress, or lack of results of some kind. Number 2 R is reevaluating. Keep asking yourself, what am I trying to do? How am I trying to do it? What are my assumptions? If my assumptions were wrong, what would I have to do differently? Could there be a better way? And again, whenever you experience frustration or stress, or whenever you're looking at a new project, keep asking these questions. What am I trying to do? How am I trying to do it? What are my assumptions? What if my assumptions were wrong, and could there be a better way? Whenever you ask these questions, you'll always come up with answers, and one insight in reevaluating can change your whole business. Number 3 is reorganizing. Be willing to continually reorganize your life, business, and activities to be more effective and to achieve better results. Don't get stuck in a rut or a comfort zone. Remember the great enemies? The enemy of the comfort zone is where people get complacent doing things in a particular way, and even if there's better ways to do it, they keep doing it in the same old way. Don't let that happen to you. Now the 4th R is restructuring. Now restructuring requires that you apply the 80-20 rule. Be prepared to restructure your personal life to focus more of your time on those few things that you do that account for most of your results. On those 20% of activities that account for 80% of the value of everything you do. Be prepared to move people, money, and activities into those areas that are most profitable for you in the business, and even abandon the rest. The 5th R is reengineering. This, of course, has gotten a lot of publicity. It's the process of simplifying your work so that you are doing fewer things, but things of greater value. Now, there's some keys to reengineering that can change your life completely. The first, A, is called practicing the law of 3. What are the 3 things you do in your work that account for 90% of the value of everything you do? We teach this to our clients over and over. Make a list of everything you do, and then ask if you could only do one thing, this is the second point, if you could only do one thing all day long, which one activity contributes the most value? If you could only do one thing all day long of all the things you do, what is the one activity that contributes the most value? Now the next point is, what activities could you delegate to others to free up your time for you to do the things that only you can do? The rule is that if someone else can do it 70% as well as you, you should delegate it. One of the biggest mistakes that people make as they move up is they revert to doing the things that they were doing before they moved up, instead of delegating it to someone else. Remember the old saying, if you want it done right, you have to do it yourself? No, today, if you want it done right, you have to pick the right person, delegate the task to them, and make sure that they do it right. Here's another fourth point. What are the activities that you could outsource to other individuals from other companies that could do it better and cheaper than you? Anything that your customer would not pay for is a candidate for outsourcing. The first logical place where businesses outsource, by the way, is paychecks. Customers don't care who writes your paychecks, and companies like Paychex or ADP can actually handle your payroll faster, better, cheaper, and with greater accuracy than you can because they specialize in that area. So many companies are thinking about outsourcing everything they possibly can to free up their time and people so they can spend more time creating and keeping customers. Now here's another question. What are the activities that you could downsize to free up more time and resources for doing the things that are most valuable? Things that you could cut back completely. Things that may take a lot of time now, but you could cut them back and reduce them so you could free up more and more of your time. And finally, what are the activities that you could eliminate altogether with no great loss to yourself or your business? We call this deliberate or creative procrastination or creative abandonment, where you abandon certain activities that are no longer relevant or important to you and resist the tendency to get into a comfort zone, to follow the path of least resistance, to keep on doing things just because you've done them in the past. Now, the sixth R is reinventing. Imagine starting your business and your career over again today. Use what we call the walk across the street method and imagine that your building had burned down and you walked across the street and you were starting your business brand new today in new premises. Here's four questions. First, what products and services would you want to bring to the market immediately if you were reinventing your business over again today? Second, what customers would you want to contact or work with immediately if you were starting your business over again today? And what should you do to keep in regular touch with them? C, what markets would you focus your time and energy on if you were starting your business over again today? And which markets would you creatively abandon? D, what people would you want to bring with you to start your new business or career? And looking at your current staff, which of your staff would you leave in the parking lot and encourage to get other jobs elsewhere? Finally, in reinventing, starting your business over again today, what products, services, or people would you want to delete from your life and work so that you have more time to do the things that make the greatest difference? Remember, taking on means letting off. Picking up means putting down. And starting something new means stopping something old. It's very important that you continually think of things that you would discontinue, outsource, downsize, eliminate, or abandon, especially in times of economic turmoil. The seventh R is regaining control. And regaining control is the key to recession-proofing your business. Be prepared to make good decisions and take new actions. Become intensely action-oriented in every area. Remember, entrepreneurs, business people do not necessarily make the right decisions, but they make their decisions right. And what we have found is as soon as you take action, you get feedback, which enables you to self-correct. As soon as you take action, you get ideas and inputs that enable you to make better decisions and to take better actions. But nothing happens, as Einstein says, until something moves. In business, nothing happens until you move. Let me summarize by saying this. We are living in one of the most challenging and competitive economic times in all of human history, and definitely in our lifetimes. Your ability to respond effectively to the inevitable ups and downs of daily life will determine your success or failure more than anything else. The good news is that many of the best businesses and the greatest fortunes were started in the depths of the worst depressions, recessions, panics, and crashes. They seem to bring out the innate creativity in entrepreneurs and business people. Your job is to join the fortunate few who use their minds and abilities to survive and thrive in any economy. As Nietzsche, the German philosopher, once said, "What doesn't kill me makes me stronger." It is in times of difficulty and adversity that you will demonstrate to yourself and to others what you are really made of inside. This is perhaps one of the greatest opportunities you will ever have to become the very best person you could possibly be and to ultimately achieve the very greatest success that is possible for you. And I hope you do. This is Brian Tracy, and thank you for listening.
Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined continuous learner. So find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.